Are you ready for the entertainment experience of a lifetime? Knockdown, Dragout, hard-hitting conversations, debates, and interviews. Well, if you said yes to any of these questions, sit back, relax, and enjoy something like no other. This is the Isolation Series Podcast, presented by the Scott Robles team at Douglas Elliman Real Estate, by WellbeingsPerformance.com for all your online meeting needs, by Barbarian Steakhouse, Canada's premier upscale restaurant. For more information, go to Barbarians.com. By ImprintPilates.com Toronto and the Greater Toronto Area's premier Pilates studio. And by the Toronto Immune and Digestive Health Institute. For more information, go to TIDHI.ca. Here now is your host, Spencer Miller.
Hey guys, and welcome to another edition of the Isolation Series. My name is Spencer Miller. Very pleased to be joined by first-time guest and dear friend of mine, Brian Austin Green. You know him from Anger Management, Knots Landing, the Sarah Connor Chronicles, and of course, Beverly Hills 90210. Brian, welcome to the Isolation Series for the very first time, my friend.
Thanks, brother. I appreciate it.
Let's jump right in. Right. I want to talk to you first and foremost about the entertainment business and the evolution of the entertainment business, specifically throughout the pandemic and coming out of the pandemic now.
Jesus, it's insane. You know, you're yes. In it now, and it's like it's a completely different business. It's crazy.
Absolutely, and we've been around the entertainment business a long time. You've been around it longer than me. And you've, seen the ebbs and flows of all different types of entertainment along the way.
Yeah.
How do you think it is going to be affected and evolving coming out on the other side of the pandemic?
I don't know. That's a good question. I think things have just changed so much, from the pandemic. You know, streaming services are so much bigger now at home. Entertainment is so much bigger. You have a lot of film actors that are now crossing over into series and streaming projects and things like that. Because that's kind of what the audience is doing. I mean, they're going to theaters, obviously. You know, you can tell by like the numbers on something like Maverick doing as well as it has, but it's, I think it's forced filmmakers to be a little more precious in what it is they do, because I don't think people go to the theater and view movies as freely as they used to. It seems like with so many options at home now on TV that people don't want to go and pay all that money unless they feel like it's absolutely necessary. I mean, a movie, again, like Maverick, crossed over. You wanted to see that in a theater. You wanted to experience the visuals, the sound, the entire thing, you know?
The grandeur, essentially.
Yeah, yeah. There's something to sitting in the theater doing that where it's like, you know, I don't want to spend all the money that I would have to spend to make a room in my house, what the experience that I get in a theater. I'll let the theater pay for all that itself, and I'll just buy a ticket. I think, you know, I think it has separated the things that really deserve a theater experience and the things that don't necessarily need one. And the things that don't need one, I'm just as happy to stream at home and watch in the comfort of my home with my popcorn machine and my kids and be sitting on my comfortable couch.
Now, on the other side of that, you were very fortunate to be a part of one of the biggest television series in the last 30 years, easy. And of course, I'm talking about the original run of Beverly Hills 90210.
Right.
That, for a lot of people back in the day, was appointment viewing. Like, you knew every Monday or every Wednesday or whenever it was at 8 o'clock. That a lot of people were tuning into Fox just to watch you and your castmates
do what did on that show for so long. Do you think that we will ever get sort of that feeling again with any type of series and things like that? Because I don't, based on what you were saying earlier about you know, all the different options, being able to stream it on your phone, being able to like go back and watch it later and watch it pretty much whenever you want. I feel like it loses, you know, some of that captive audience that went back week in and week out religiously.
It does. Yeah. I think, I don't know if we'll ever see that time again, honestly. I think, you know, our show was sort of at the last leg of a world that existed pre-internet, pre-access, pre-streaming, pre-all of it. So it was, it worked for that time. But I mean, back, you know, back before what the entertainment industry is now, you had shows like MASH and Dallas
and Knott's Landing.
And Knott's Landing, yeah. That the people, like you said, had to tune into every week because it was the only chance they were going to get to see it. And then they would go through the ridiculous process of setting up their VCRs to hopefully record, hopefully record the show that was on, you know, and keep some sort of record of it. But, you know, television has changed so much. I mean, when I did the show, Terminator, the Sarah Connor Chronicles, it was really ahead of its time in the sense of how serialized that show was. And it was on network television, which I don't, looking back on it in hindsight, it didn't work because the show it was too informative. There was too much. So if someone missed an episode, they had no idea what was going on the week after. And there was, you know, it was so hard to find and sort of catch up. A show like that now with streaming, I feel like would have worked perfectly because people could have binge watched an entire season, known what was going on. But, you know, TV just continues to sort of change and evolve that way. I mean, I think with as many shows as there are now streaming, that the content of a season has changed. Shows aren't as standalone episode based as they used to be. They are much more season Bible influenced. So people sit down, they figure out what's the story through the entire season. And then they trust that people are going to sit and binge watch the show or watch it streaming, you know, however long it takes for them to do, which absolutely makes sense because you can go back and you can watch the things that you don't understand. You feel like you're missing out on and catch up to it. So I think in a lot of respects, streaming has opened a door that wasn't necessarily there before, but then in a lot of respects, it's closed that experience that we had in the 90s and previously of shows being an event, you having to be home to watch them and experience them and everybody getting together and throwing a party around the airing of something.
Okay, now you and I are friends. Yeah. Okay, so we're just sitting here talking and things like that, and I wouldn't be doing the podcast justice if I didn't talk to you about this. You just mentioned about the Terminator Sarah Connor Chronicles not working because of the time that it came in, but if it came in a little bit later, it would have worked with the streaming and everything else like that.
Yeah.
Something else that glaringly did not work in recent years was the quote unquote reboot that you guys did a couple of years ago of the original cast getting together and doing that. And right. so many people were so excited to have all of you guys back together again, getting the band back together again, so to speak. And then it just didn't work because you guys were playing hyper versions of yourselves,
right?
And different things like that. Like, take me back to however many years ago that was now, when you guys sat in the room and were pitched the idea to all get back together and do what you did, because, you know, I don't think I'm speaking out of turn when I say that it was an epic fail.
I think it was an epic fail, depending on how you were looking at it and what you thought or hoped it would be. I never went into it with the thought or intention of it being a reboot of a series that possibly lasted for seasons. We already did 10 seasons of the original show. The thought of us doing some sort of a reboot had been kicked around for years. And it was something for me that was just a hard pass. Because I played David Silver for 10 years. I didn't want to do it anymore.
Yeah, exactly correct. And sorry to cut you off, but I feel like you should just leave things alone sometimes. And too many times in Hollywood these days, they want to reboot or they want to recapture the magic. So again, you know, I understand that it may not have wanted to be a season by season thing. It may have just wanted to be a 10 episode, quote unquote, Fox event or whatever the case may be.
Six episodes.
But there seemed to have been a disconnect there where lots of people were throwing their hands up in the air and waving them like they just don't care, in the words of the old hip hop song. So what do you think happened there?
As far as the cast or as far as the audience?
No, as far as like just the way that it was received, because so many people were excited, like I said, to see all of you guys back.
Right.
Together.
Well, you know? So I think the disconnect from what I've heard so far is that people were hoping that the show would basically pick up where it left off. So people would see what the characters were up to now. It would be a continuation of 90210, of the show that we made. And so when we didn't do that, I think people were disappointed because they expected some certain thing that they didn't get. I thought the concept was really interesting because I'm not a fan of reboots necessarily of shows in general, and especially of our show. Again, we did 10 years of that show. To continue it on for another season or another thing and do like a new, you know, an updated version of what it is we've already done is boring to me. I loved the concept of we as a cast meet up again at a fan event and decide, hey, you know, what would it take for us to get a reboot of the show off the ground? And that's what the six episodes of the show were about. It was about writing a script. It was about selling it. It was about, we ended the whole thing at the upfronts for Fox being picked up. So to me, that was the journey. That was like, okay, that's what the reboot was about. And that's where we ended, with a network saying, hey, let's give it a shot. And then like, thank you. It's done. We've done our part. It wasn't necessarily a 90210 show reboot the way people would expect. It still
must have been fun for you guys as a cast.
It was great.
Yes.
It was great. We shot the show in Vancouver, which is hysterical. I mean, we're doing the reboot of Beverly Hills 90210 and we're shooting it in Canada. But that actually made it really fun. It was kind of, Ian said at one point, he summed it up the best. He said it was like summer camp. We were there for 2 months shooting. We all have kids and families and all that stuff, but we were there for the most part just by ourselves. And so it really, really gave us an opportunity to hang out as a group, like we did when we were younger and we didn't have the same responsibilities we do now, and just enjoy each other's company, which was really cool. It was a really fun experience. And then the experience of actually making it was really amazing. I mean, they made an exact replica of the Peach Pit. So standing on that set, seeing it all again, I mean, down to the plates and the silverware and the stools and the tables, everything was an exact replica. It was pretty surreal to experience.
How long did it take you to be comfortable with the fact that you played David Silver as long as you played it? Because you started playing him, I believe, at the age of 14 or 15.
17.
It was 17.
Yeah.
And you went through a lot of your formidable years growing up on that show, even though you'd already been in business for a long time.
Yeah.
So one could only imagine at the end of it, not only were you relieved because you did 10 years of grueling seasons and things like that, but a lot of it was your identity when you were younger. So how long did it take you until you were comfortable being like, okay, I did David Silver. I'm proud of David Silver. Thank you very much. Because a lot of fans undoubtedly come up to you on a daily basis, weekly basis, whatever it is, and are like, hey, David Silver, blah, 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 blah. And that can get annoying at certain points.
It was definitely for me. I can only speak for me. It was an adjustment. It was, you know, coming off a show like that, being the age that I was, having gone through such formidable years doing it. Of course, my first instinct is I wanted to separate myself from it as much as possible and be like, oh, it's the new me. You know, it's the post 90210 Brian Austin Green. So I just didn't even want to talk about the show at that point. It's like I wanted to do completely new things. And then as I got older, I realized that it's not about making that project go away and that show go away, because it was an amazing experience and it opened a lot of doors while I was doing it. But it's about doing other things that are memorable also. So you then become known for that show plus this one, plus this other thing that you did, plus that. So it becomes about, for me, it's become about making my own name, not just necessarily being a name of eight that was on a show at one point. So it's separating my own name from the show. And honestly, the only way I can, I think, realistically do that is just with a body of work, is being known for other things that I've done, whether it's Terminator or Anger Management or Desperate Housewives or just as many things as I possibly can. That's the challenge, I think, moving ahead for me is just continuing to do things, you know.
And you've been involved in music all throughout your career.
Yeah.
And different things like that. What sort of was the impetus for you to really get wrapped up in the music side of things? Because I know you have an unbelievable joy, as I do, for all different types of music and appreciation for all different artists. Things like that. And looking back at a show like 90210, that for me, especially in your older years, must have been super cool in terms of that whole Peach Pit After Dark scenario where you had young unknown artists at the time like Christina Aguilera, you name the hot that was about to be released. They came on your show and did what they did as their first quote unquote television appearance. So what has the music journey been like for you throughout your career and your life, and even with that cool Peach Pit twist on it as well?
Music's been interesting. It's been an interesting balance for me because I grew up in music. My father is a drummer professionally. So when I was born, he was touring. He was touring with Glenn Campbell at the time, playing Rhinestone Cowboy. He played on the Southern Nights album. He did all these things. And then he stopped touring and was doing all studio stuff to be around the house more. So he played in the studio with like Sinatra and the Doobie Brothers and all sorts of people. So I grew up playing and studying music. I always assumed that I was going to end up being a drummer in a band. That was sort of what I thought my future held. And then I started acting and it just snowballed to the point where I was so busy doing it. It was like, okay, well, I'm making great money doing this right now. So I might as well just stick this out for a little while. There's no backing out of this now. And then once the show was going, it gave me an opportunity to focus more on music again, because I had spare time where I didn't have to be out auditioning for things. I didn't really have enough time to do other projects, but I had tons of time to work on music while I was at home. I had my studio, I had the stuff that I was doing. So it allowed me time to really get back into a passion that I had. 90210 musically opened so many doors for people that I didn't completely understand at the time because I was young. So I thought like, oh, what, you know, having like Babyface and Luther Vandross and all these people that performed on the show, I thought like, oh man, thank you so much for the honor of coming and doing our show, not realizing what a huge opportunity it was for an artist to come on and perform. And looking back on it now, it's like, man, what an amazing tool it became for artists and labels to use. I didn't completely get the business side of it. But we had a lot of amazing people, and I was working on a lot of music during the show, which then later on in the show started crossing over much more. It went from David Silver doing music, so I was doing music that was just David Silver music, to David Silver doing music that was actually music I was in the studio writing and recording for the show. So those lines started becoming blurred a little bit for me, which was hard because, you know, music, anything artistic becomes so personal. And so then when all of the artistic things start blurring together and becoming one, and you have trouble separating them, you open yourself up for much more judgment and criticism. I mean, if I had been doing just my music at home and it was just me and my friends listening to it and people hearing it that I'd put it out to, it would have been different than doing things on a scale as large as 90210, where millions and millions and millions of people were listening to stuff literally the week after I had recorded it. We were on set shooting things. So it was tough.
I still to this day cannot listen to the Babyface track, This Is For The Cool, because of what you guys did with that track. I like, anytime I listen to that, I'm like, nope. Just because, you know, I remember, like, at least for the large part of one season, you guys played that, like, incessantly at different points.
Yeah.
And so I still have not been able to listen to that one particular Babyface song. And it's nothing against Babyface. It's just one of those things where you're like, nope, can't do it.
Yeah, totally. I get it.
Moving away from the nostalgia for a minute of 90210, because that's not what you're here for. You're here because you're a buddy of mine, even though I don't like to admit it in open court. But one of the things that you're working on pretty regularly right now is your film fund as well, with a bunch of different people.
Yeah.
Why don't you tell the audience a little bit about that? Because I think that is very important to talk about, especially coming out of the pandemic, like we talked about. A lot of artists are looking to branch out more and more and do what they can to get their back to where it needs to be, including yourself.
Yeah. So I, during the pandemic, I filmed a movie titled Last the Night in Sacramento with Nick Leisure, who directed it, who you know very well. I had an amazing time working on it with him and really started wrapping my mind around the concept of taking more control of my career and other people's careers and getting into the other side of it a little more, into producing and financing and finishing films that I was involved in as an actor that I wasn't involved in as an actor. So, you know, we're currently working on that. I've got, I have a few other film things that I've got, cooking, but it's really, you know, at the end of the day, it's about, especially in an industry like ours, it's, you want as much control of it as you possibly can, because it's not a 9-to-5 job. There is no consistency to it, really, except for like maybe 1%, you know. For the most part, most of the people are sort of from job to job, and so it's like you work and you make great money for a period of time, and then all of a sudden you're not working at all, you're between things and you're not making any money, and so you're sort of bouncing around hoping things find some sort of a rhythm. And so I'm kind of in a place now where it's like I want to do that through the production side of things and then bring in other talented actors and people that I know and open and hopefully open some doors for them and give some people opportunities. Because the business can be a bit
jarring.
Yeah, a bit just selected. It's like they find their group of people that work, and then they're just like horse blinders. They just literally hire the same people over and over again.
It's like a high school clique.
It is. You're either in the popular group or you're not.
Correct. 100%. You know, you talk about, you know, the business being job to job and things like that. That's one of the main benefits as to why I'm in my wheelchair, you know, if you want to call it that, because I'm always sitting down and ready for it no matter what. But I'll get you out of here on these last couple things. Number one, what do you want for Brian Austin Green now at this point, in terms of the fact that you have a great set of kids, you have a great new partner in Sharna, you have a brand new baby. Congratulations, even though you're going to be chasing them around up until you're about, you know, 68, 70 years old now.
Yeah, I'm a lifer. I remember when I was doing the Terminator series, there was a guy that had a tattoo of a clock with no hands on it. And I didn't understand what that meant. And then I found out after the fact, like, oh, people that get life sentences get those tattoos because it's a clock with no hands. And so, which I'm going to get now because like my manager is going through the whole empty nest thing. Her youngest is leaving the house. I've got another like 18 to 20 ahead of me before that happens. Honestly though, I think for me, I'm really focused on my legacy in a sense of like who I am to people, what positivity I can bring to people, what influence I can bring to people. I really understand the concept that the stuff that I do, the projects that I do, the work that I do, at the end of my life, that's not going to be the stuff that's important. It's not the stuff that's going to be important to my kids and hopefully my grandkids and the people around me. The memory of who I was as a person is going to be the lasting thing, hopefully. So I want to be the best person that I can possibly be. I want to be considerate and kind and loving. I want to influence people to do the same in their life. I want to be as much of a positive voice with this crazy soapbox that I have, that I still don't totally understand why I have it, but I want to use it to the best of my ability to help people and better society and give people voices that don't normally have them, or wish they did. I want to use it to bring awareness, awareness of societal issues and things. And I want to use it to teach people things, and I want to be open to learning and sharing what I learn. Because at the end of the day, I mean, that's, you know, you and I hanging out is worth much more than a show. A show at this point for me now is, they're just jobs. They're just paychecks. It's just ways of earning a living so I can then live. I don't live to work. I work to live. Yep. And it's a very different perspective on things.
Right. And one of those outlets is your own podcast, with Brian Austin Green. Very original title, by the way.
Yeah. Yeah. You told me that before.
Not on the air, so I wanted to reiterate that. Why don't you tell people about the podcast and where they can find it? Is it all major platforms like Spotify and Apple?
Yes, Podcast? It's on all major platforms. I've been doing it for, God, about 5 years now. We're just coming up on our 100th episode, which shows how consistent we've been. We have no corporate sponsors. We have no, we make no money doing it. We've honestly lost money throughout the years doing it, but we have a great time doing it. My partner, Derek Russell, he lives in Mississippi, and we call each other, and record it. We record literally from the picking up of the line and hello until, okay, see you next time. And we record for about an hour, and, we just catch up on life. We catch up on current topics and things that are going on. We talk about films that are out. We talk about all sorts of stuff. Some episodes end up being much more comedy based. And then some, depending on what's going on in the world, don't. There's no real format to the show, which I'm sure it's a blessing to us. It's a curse to most listening to it, because I'm sure we end up wasting an hour of people's time for the most part. but it's just, it's an outlet for us. It's, we have a good time doing it. We get to talk about amazing things. We get to talk to really cool people sometimes. It's been a blast to do it.
I'll expect my invitation to come on the podcast in the mail.
The next time we do it, which who knows how long it'll be, I'll let you know.
Yeah,
we'll have you on for sure.
3 years from now, it'll be episode 102.
Totally. At the rate we're going, for sure. Yeah.
Okay, last two things. Number one, couldn't get you out of here without talking a little sports. I know that you are a diehard basketball guy and have had a relationship with the Lakers.
I haven't had a relationship. I would love to think that I've had a relationship with the Lakers. I think the only relationship that I've had is giving them my money.
No, but that's
so I have season seats.
Yeah, you're a diehard Lakers fan. I'm not saying that you
I am.
Have a relationship with the organization, but you're a diehard Lakers fan. And we know that LeBron is getting a little long in the tooth, so to speak, by everybody else's standards. We know that he's still pretty good at his age.
Yeah.
Enough so that they signed him to a 2-year, $96 million extension earlier this summer.
Yeah, which isn't too shabby.
No,
he seems to be doing pretty well for himself.
Yeah, he's not gonna be searching for jobs anytime.
Yeah, he's not gonna starve anytime soon.
No. But they also brought in the pest in Patrick Beverley not too long ago as well to join him this season.
Yeah. Yeah.
My question to you is this: with Anthony Davis and LeBron James and Russell Westbrook still until he gets traded inevitably, I think, and now Patrick Beverley and whatnot, what do you think ultimately went wrong for the Lakers last season? Because, you know, when you have Anthony Davis, LeBron James, and Russell Westbrook on paper, you should be doing pretty darn well for yourself, and yet Anthony Davis, for the majority of his career, has been more handicapped than me most of the time.
The tough thing for Anthony Davis is because he is as dominant a player as he is, he's used much more frequently than a body of his size can handle. And so I think it takes its toll. And it's taken its toll from, I'm sure, a lifetime of playing the sport. I mean, he's been playing since he was a little kid. I think, you know, on paper is a tough one. I'm a fan of the sport. I really love the Lakers, and of course, hope that they do well and play well every season and every game. But at the end of the day, you know, this is what teams do. You have these teams that are dominant for a while, and then they burn out from that, and then they go down, and then they have to sort of reformulate and bring in some new people and new coaching and new staffing and some new ideas and some new concepts of what it is they do. I mean, Golden State, who would have thought that they would have become as dominant a force as they have? Because for so long, Golden State was the, like, it was a franchise where it was like, do they even count? Like, are the Warriors even a team, like, within the NBA? You know, it was kind of like it was sort of an afterthought. And then all of a sudden it's like, man, that's, you hear the name Golden State and it's like, they are the face. Steph Curry is the face of basketball.
Yeah. Not only that, but to go from, you know, missing the playoffs, you know, and being down and out for like two seasons, to come all the way back and be dominant and win their fourth championship in 8 years this past year is crazy to me.
Yeah. So I have had season seats for the Lakers since before Kobe was signed and was brought onto the team. So I had season seats at the Forum. that then moved over to the Staples Center, which is now the crypto arena, yeah. which is strange to say.
Yes.
But, you know, I have seen, I've seen a few different iterations now of the Lakers, and I've seen them dominant a few different times. I mean, I've seen a powerhouse team in Kobe and Shaq, and then Kobe and Pau Gasol. And then all of a sudden you have, you know, LeBron and them winning, winning in the bubble in Florida. So I have seen the team reimagine and recreate itself constantly. And there's no doubt in my mind that I'll see that again. I think now it's this matter of having these dominant players that we have that then help shape the next run of players. I mean, I think LeBron, as amazing of a player as he is, he can't play 48 straight minutes every single game and be the guy that saves a team. I think that time for him and the consistency of being able to do that for him is he's on the back end of that.
Do you think we will see him inevitably end up playing with his son Bronny or not?
I hope so. I think that would be really amazing. Who knows? You know, unfortunately, you know, he's one injury away from us not seeing that. So let's keep our fingers crossed and pray that that doesn't happen and that he has the opportunity to play with his son, with both sons. It'd be amazing.
Only time will tell, and it'll remind me of when Ken Griffey Jr. got to play with Ken Griffey Sr. at the beginning of his time in Seattle, which was amazing. Yeah. We get all first-time guests out of here the same way, and I'm going to do that with you right now. You and I have been friends now for a bit, and you know, it's one of those situations where you either click with people or you don't. And right from the get-go, you and I clicked. And you know, it feels like we've known each other a lot longer than we have. And yeah. That's something special in itself, in my opinion. So my question to you is the same question I ask all first-time guests is, do you have a Spence moment that has stuck out to you so far about our friendship that you would like to share with the viewing and listening audience? Because it's one thing hearing about our friendship from my side. It's a whole other thing hearing it from you.
I think, honestly, the thing that drew me to you more than anything, which is so impressive, is just your joy of life, your ability to just roll with it and not take it so seriously, and just be kind and influential and compassionate with people. I feel like people meet each other and get along really well when they tend to be on the same path in life. And I think that you and I, even though our lives are very different in so many ways, we're on the same path right now. And so I think when you meet people that that are on that same path with you, it's a very easy relationship to have, because we have way more things in common than we do that are different. Who knows how long that'll last? I could end up hating you in another 6 months. Which you know, that's just sort of, I mean, we have to be we have to be open to that. but that. I don't hate you yet. we're doing okay.
Yes. Well, I agree with you 100%. And like I said, you know, you either click with people or you don't, and we clicked right away, not only because of our similarities and what we like and whatever, but just because we are similar individuals, I believe.
Yeah.
and have similar ideals and different things like that. Absolutely. So I'm about to say something now that people may want to timestamp in 6 months or whatever, but I'm proud to call you a friend. And thank you for being a good friend. I really appreciate you, and I appreciate you taking the time to join us here on the Isolation Series today for episode 195, which is 95 more than yours that you've been doing way longer than me.
See, I kind of see now. I feel like you're dragging me through the mud a little bit, and like you're trying to, you know, best me, which now we're getting into a competitive space, and I don't know if this ends well.
Well, to take a phrase out of Babyface, this is for the cool in me. but yeah, man, we look forward to having you on again, hopefully in the not too distant future. And you can continue to still strive and be as good looking, charismatic, and smart as me. And sadly for you, fall short every time.
Well, you know, it gives me a bar to look up to, which is good.
Absolutely. Look forward to the next time, my friend. And peace, again, brother. So much for today. That is the one and only multi-talented Brian Austin Green. And this has been another edition of the Isolation Series of me, Spencer Miller, episode 195, marching very quickly to episode 200. We look forward to coming at you again tomorrow with another fantastic episode to preview the rest of week 2 in the NFL and talk Roger Federer's retirement from competitive tennis. But until then, for Brian, I am Spence, and I'm the better looking one out of the two of us, and we'll see you again tomorrow. Bye-bye.
Peace, brother.
And Paul, please tell people all about some more whole grain goodness that is us.
Folks, be sure to check us out on podbean.com by going to theisolationseries.podbean.com. There you'll find the audio-only versions of the podcast, including all of our past amazing interviews. One more time, that's theisolationseries.podbean.com. And hey, don't forget to follow us on Instagram. It's at @thespencermiller and at Pauly Shields, Pauly spelled P-A-W-L-Y. So find us on podbean.com, follow us on Instagram, and don't forget to like, share, and subscribe.
And once again, everybody, thank you for watching and or listening and supporting this thing we like to call the Isolation Series. For Paul Shields, I am Spencer Miller, and we will see you again very, very soon. Bye-bye.